Live from Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon, it is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Nice crowd filing in here at Cherokee Steakhouse, where we will have our three-hour hockey block of Preds talk. Right here, Preds Insiders until 7, Slapshot Radio with Paul McCann, Zach McCann, and Brent Peterson coming up at 7, and then Penalty Box Radio with Justin Bradford and company coming up at 8. A lot of great prizes if you want to come out and register to win any of those prizes. We'll be giving away prizes as the night goes along, and also stay for a great dinner here as we talk Preds here at Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon. I'm Ryan Porth, joined by Jeremy K. Gover. The K is for knowledge at thegamenashville.com and the Predators Radio Network. Gover, how are we doing this evening?
Porth, I'm doing fine. How are you, sir?
Well, I'd be better if we were talking about a different outcome last night.
Yeah.
I mean, last night, you knew going in it was going to be a big game against the Toronto Maple Leafs. First game back from the All-Star break. You know the urgency has to pick up with this team, the fact that they are out on the outside looking in. And I thought the first period they were looking pretty good, even though they trailed 2-1 after the first period. But I got to say, in the second period, it was very concerning. And the question that comes to mind for me is, why does this keep happening with this Predators team? Why? Why in the second period do they take the foot off the gas and Toronto ends up scoring 2 goals? Why do they keep having these kind of losses, especially on home ice? Why? That is the question that I think a lot of Preds fans and all of us, you know, who talk about this team, that is the question today that we are asking. Why?
My nickname may be Knowledge, thanks to Stu Grimson, but I don't have an answer for you on this one, Porth. I'm so sorry. It's very disconcerting. You're right. This team, though, this season has a tendency to either come out the gate extremely strong and then they're not able to sustain it for 60 full minutes, or they stumble out of the gate and then find their game too late in the game, right? And so last night we saw the latter, the former. So we saw a team that looked pretty good. You're right. That first period, you're like, okay, well, you know, they're down 2-1 at the break. You still felt pretty good about it. Their legs were moving. They were making things happen. Toronto's a great team with a lot of talent, so you can't really fault them for that.
I looked at the buddy that I was at the game with, and I said, look, they're down 2-1, but two goals for Toronto is not going to be enough tonight. They're
right.
Getting so many chances that this looks like it's going to be a shootout.
And
you know, 4-3, 5-4, something like that.
And their power play had been clicking at, I think it was 32 or 37% in
sure.
19 games. So you knew the Preds gave them opportunities, they're going to cash in that way as well.
And they go down 4-1 at the end of 2 periods. And the Victor Arvidsson goal in the 3rd period was too little, too late. They lose 5-2. And this roller coaster regular season continues for this team. And Captain Roman Josi last night after the game talked to the media and talked about not bouncing back after going down to the Leafs.
You guys talk about trying to bounce back if something goes wrong. What kind of things have you gone through in your mind about, you know, what might work there or what might be going on in those moments?
Well, I think it was pretty evident tonight. We like I said, I thought our first was good. Then our second, we don't play well. They score 1 or 2, and it just kind of keeps going from there. We got to find a way to get out of it after they score a goal. That next shift's got to be going our way. There's gonna be times when they have to park that momentum. That's normal. There's some good teams in this league, but we got to find a way to get out of it. It can't be 1 or 2 goals and then 3 goals and it just keeps going. So as a team, we got to do a way better job of coming back and changing momentum in to our way.
That was Roman Josi after the game last night. And there have been too many games, not only this season, but last regular season as well, where this trend kind of started of having outcomes like that one last night, where we hear the same kind of message from the locker room, but the results don't really change. And that's the concerning thing to me, is that we're here on January 28th having similar discussions that we had on November 28th, or even earlier in November when they had that losing streak, or even going back to last season. Like, this stuff keeps happening even though they've made a coaching change, even though they've been juggling the lineup, even though they have had some pretty good contributions from, you know, Jakob Trenin or Colin Blackwell up from Milwaukee. Nothing is changing win-loss-wise.
So I provided that audio obviously to the station of Roman Josi there from last night. And it's not what I was saying. I'm going somewhere with this, Porth. I didn't want any credit. Thank you. And so my point was I was in the scrum with him, and it was very noticeable that he was frustrated and almost without answers as we are, right? So, and I'll give you a great example that fans, if they go back and even watch on NHL TV, the post-game interview stuff, locker room, you still won't be able to see. So Josi's talking about they need to be better and this needs to be a full 60 and everyone needs to contribute and blah, 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 blah. But he was doing it with he was talking with his hands a lot. You've been in scrums with him, Porth. You know he kind of puts his hands on his hips and he kind of delivers his answer or whatever. There was a lot of this, a lot of music orchestrating going on, and it was the first time I've noticed him do that ever. And so I was, and you could hear it in his voice, of course, and all that. And you just wondered if he was going to say what he was possibly going to say, because it became very clear to me standing in front of him last night that he is also at a loss for an understanding as to why this team that is this talented on paper cannot get it together for either 60 minutes or at the very least punch back when they get smacked in the face by a Toronto team that goes down, takes it down 2-1 or 3-1, whatever it is. They don't have an answer. They don't have a counterpunch.
It goes back to what Rocco Grimaldi said.
It does.
After the Anaheim game, where he said that they don't have a response when they go down, that they hang their heads on the bench when they start trailing in a game.
That it's almost like, oh, here we go again.
Exactly.
And they can't have that. There's no time to figure that out anymore, right? We talked about this on this show. I believe David Poile made the coaching change when he did to see how the team would respond, of course, but also because the trade deadline is looming and he needed some direction. Am I a seller? Am I a buyer? Do we stand pat? What am I? Right? And if you make the coaching change, let's say February 1st, you don't really have a clear message of what that is. You're guessing. And if you make it too early, then maybe you've just jettisoned your longtime coach that got you to Stanley Cup final, right? So I really do believe it was done when it was done for a reason, and that first reason is the deadline. But it's also because the season wasn't over yet, right? But this team is getting closer and closer to, let's just say, February 15th, where there's like a point of no return, right? Yes, they have games in hand of other teams. There's no denying that. So if they go on some sort of run, maybe we're having a different conversation. But the problem is right now is they're not showing us over 60 minutes on any given night. So it's probably the New York stretch, actually, that I can think of, to where we can believe they're going to go on some sort of run of any kind, right? And I think that's the disappointing part, because we've seen this team in October outright dominate games.
Sure.
And then
they were in the middle of dominating a game on Halloween night.
Yeah.
I keep that was going back to the game on Halloween.
That was when the wheels fell off.
I keep going back to that game where they led 4-1 going into the third period and lost 6-5 in overtime.
And Calgary, by the way, in that game, this is my favorite stat, they didn't have a shot on goal in the first 14 minutes of the game in that game. That's how dominant the Preds were that night.
And if you remember, two nights prior to that, they blew the doors off the Blackhawks at home.
Yes.
The Blackhawks had no business even losing that game by only 3 goals.
Right.
I mean, the Preds easily could have won that game 7-8-0. And the 3 goals scored in that game were all by Nick Bonino on, the greasy goals in front when they had all sorts of chances all night. And it's like something just clicked in a bad way when they blew that game to Calgary.
Right.
And it's unexplainable what we're watching with this team. One night they look like they should. Let's go back to January 9th in Chicago. They win that game 5-2. They follow it up with a win in Winnipeg, and you're thinking, okay, John Hines is getting this thing on track. Those were really his first two official games behind the bench. But now I'm sitting there in the stands last night asking, what's really different about this team than it was pre-John Hines when Peter Laviolette was behind the bench? Like, what's different? They're saying a lot of the same things after the game. They're having these periods where they take their foot off the gas when they've been admitting all season long that that's been an issue. You know?
Yes, but I want to make sure something's very clear. Roman Josi, who gave us those comments earlier, is the only one this really doesn't apply to. He's been the most consistent player from top to bottom for all 60 minutes.
100%.
all season long. He's even to the point where they were in that 3 or 4 game stretch where they lost every game and they're just spiraling out of control. He was the only one. He was trying. You could see him putting the team on his back and trying to do not too much, but doing everything he possibly could, whether it be generating offense, getting pucks to the front, trying to hit guys with passes in the slot, good defensive plays, breaking down odd man rushes. I mean, he was doing everything he possibly could and trying to take over games because he has been their best player, bar none, this season and the most consistent player. So when he says he's frustrated or when he says we got to get this together, it takes everybody, he's really the only one that has a right to say that because he's the only one that's dialed in every single minute of every game. And that's not taking anything from the goaltenders or anybody else. I'm just saying that he's the one that's going out there every single night and performing how they should.
I would say Nick Bonino has been close to that, but Nick Bonino shouldn't be your one or two best forwards this season.
Depth scoring is only great when your top players are also your top players, and your depth scoring can give you that threat.
When you don't have to rely on them.
Right, but instead, that's the depth scoring is the only thing keeping this team afloat right now. And to your point, though, Nick Bonino, yes, he's looked great this season, but he only has one goal since December 17th. So even he is struggling.
I thought he had a good game last night.
He did have a great game last night. I'm just pointing out the fact that this team needs goals, and even the guys that are having career seasons, like a Nick Bonino type, Rocco Grimaldi, they just haven't clicked lately.
So according to sportsclubstats.com, the Preds currently have a 41.3% chance of making the playoffs, and last night's loss decreased that number by 12%.
That's a lot. Which is interesting because it's an Eastern Conference team.
I know.
You would think that would be the case if they played Dallas or they played Minnesota or something.
One of the wild card,
right?
Like Arizona or Edmonton.
Right,
somebody
they're directly competing with.
So, I mean, they have 34 games left, and you would have to figure they have to win, 21 of those last 34?
Yeah.
Do you have any hope after what we've seen through 48 games
that
is actually going to happen?
That's what I'm just saying. They haven't shown us that we can say, okay, they've got 4 games in hand on Vegas or whatever, right? 5 games at the break. 5 games in hand on Vegas. So, okay, if they win 3 of those, then and you can kind of massage it that way, like mentally.
Sure.
Right now you're thinking, well, they've shown me nothing over time consistent-wise. So, therefore, if they have 10 points in hand, they're only going to get 5 of them. And that's all you can give them credit for right now, which is a little sad.
Well, the sample size for this season is 48 games. But for me, this sample size is larger than 48 games because this goes back to the playoffs last year. This goes back to the second half of the regular season last year.
But how much do you allow them a gray area in the coaching change, though? Right? Because, yes, you're absolutely correct. But those were all under Laviolette. So Coach Hines gets here mid-season. Nobody's expecting it. Within reason.
Sure.
Nobody's expecting a coaching change, especially under Poyle's watch. They flip the switch. There's maybe, 5 games, 6 games before the break, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
You throw out the first game because it was like that day when he got there.
Right.
Right? So then you've got 4 or 5 games. Then there's a big, long break, and then they come back. And that should have been the first step to, okay, new leaf, everybody comes back. We got 5 games in hand on Vegas, 4 games on everybody else. Let's hit the ground running.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, they came up with a second period that we saw last
week. Well, for David Poyle, he's going to have a decision on whether he's buying or selling probably after the Carolina game on February 18th. Because I don't think you can go into that weekend, Friday in Chicago, Saturday home Columbus, with those two games determining whether you are buying or selling at this deadline. Like, in my mind, they've got, and I'm just counting this off the top of my head, they've got 11 games. These next 11 games are going to determine whether this team is going to be in the hunt for the rest of the way or they're selling before the deadline. And trading pieces like Mikael Granlund and possibly even like a Craig Smith. Nick Bonino right now, the way he's been playing this season,
his value is at an all-time high. Yeah, strike while the iron's hot, for sure.
Right. So definitely interesting times for this Nashville Predators team and for Ryan Johansson, who only played 10-plus minutes last night. We'll get into that next. What is going on with Ryan Johansson? That's coming up next. Jeremy Kegover of the Preds Radio Network and thegamenashville.com. I'm Ryan Porth. You are listening to Preds Insiders live from Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon on ESPN 102.5. The game streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders. ESPN 102.5. The game live here at Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon, where a nice crowd is filling in here Slapshot Radio coming up at 7, Penalty Box Radio coming up at 8 here at Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon. A lot of great prizes. So if you live out this way and want to come out here for dinner and a night of Preds Talk here in person, head on out to 450 Cherokee Dock Road, where we are currently broadcasting. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover here, Preds Insiders. Last night, the Preds lose 5-2 to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And Gover, last night I was looking at all the different numbers after the game, and I did not realize real time that Ryan Johansson only had 10 minutes and 28 seconds of ice time last night. I was floored by that.
I didn't notice until Adam Vingan asked the question in the press conference. I don't know if that's a sad tale on me for not noticing, or if it's a sad tale on the fact that Johansson was so unnoticeable out there all game that I just didn't pick up on how many times he goes out on the ice.
I honestly don't really pick up on exact time on ice numbers live, real time.
Sure.
I have to have the NHL app or NHL.com tell me. That was very surprising last night. Johansson, I went through his game logs in his career. That was Ryan Johansson's lowest ice time number in a game in which he didn't exit early with injury or game misconduct since he was a rookie.
Wow. That's quite the research by you. Props.
Well, it only takes about 2 minutes to do that.
Doesn't matter.
On Hockey Reference.
It sounded very impressive.
Hockey Reference is my best reference for a lot of the numbers that you hear on Preds Insiders. But that's kind of alarming, isn't it?
Yes, it really is.
That Ryan Johansson, who we all expect to be this team's number one center, to get 10 minutes and 28 seconds of ice time last night. Johansson has 2 points in his last 13 games, mm-hmm. now on pace for just 46 points this season, which is far lower than what you would expect out of your $8 million center. And last night, John Hines, after the game, addressed the fact that Ryan Johansson did not get his usual ice time.
John, what went into your decision to play Ryan Johansson 10 minutes and 28 seconds?
Well, I just felt, you know, we were, as the game goes on, you want to be able to play the players that are playing, you know, at a level that they can do it. And I think your job as a coach is we had him on a line match. We switched the line match because we didn't like it. So, you know, that's just what happens in the game. And I think with players, if they want to play more, they got to play good.
That was John Hines last night after the game. Ryan Johansson, his season average is 17 minutes and 34 seconds. So last night, 7 less minutes than he has been getting on average all season long. And really, Ryan Johansson's game this season, I think we would all admit, has not been anywhere close to where we would expect it or what we've seen out of 92 since he arrived in Nashville.
He is 8th on the team in scoring right now, as you mentioned, with 27 points in 48 games, and that is not what you think and what you're paying your top-line center to do. Now, I think there are several factors here. I think when the team is going, he is going. Mm-hmm. He had a great October, just like the team did, and even in seasons past, when the team is playing really well, short of getting to the Stanley Cup Final without him, of course, mm-hmm. unfortunately, you know, he's been a 65 point guy, which is what you want him to be. Which when you put him out there with Forsberg and Arvidsson as well, you expect him to be that. The problem here, and there's several problems, but the one of the issues that I see is that he's had a rotating cast of wingers, right?
Sure.
I mean, Austin Watson was his top line winger last night
and the Saturday before the break.
Right. So Arvidsson's a constant, but then he's not a constant because then he goes to the third line, and then you put Forsberg up there, but then Forsberg's actually better with Duchesne and Granlund on the line. So it's this hodgepodge of, well, let's just spin this app and see who your wingers are going to be tonight. I mean, that's what it's mm-hmm. like, right? And I think there's a lot to be said for chemistry, and therefore there's a lot to be said about having new line mates all the time. So, yes, Cal Yarncroke right now and Johansson are kind of a pair, but you can't tell me that Cal Yarncroke and Ryan Johansson are better than the top line that Predators fans are accustomed to of Forsberg, Johansson, and Arvidsson. You can't tell me that. That's a great line.
Sure, but even when Forsberg and Arvidsson have been on Johansson's line, those three together haven't looked the same as they have in years past. Whatever reason.
I totally agree. I'm just saying that when you're a guy – Some guys thrive on that chemistry, and I know what this player is going to do, even if they're slumping or struggling. eventually they'll work it out, right? Other guys thrive on having different line mates. I just nothing suggests to me that putting Craig Smith, you remember, he started the season on the first line, you know, and then he didn't really fare well. They tried to put Turris up there in their preseason. Forsberg, again, Arvidsson kind of reunited. And then there's just been kind of this weird, you know, just, again, hodgepodge, best word I can come up with Johansson in the top line right now in the season. And I think his numbers are reflecting that. I'm certainly not letting him off the hook. He needs to be better. There's no question. But I just do think there's something to be said for that. The other factor I was kind of giving a nod to earlier was that the coaching change as well, right? He's used to Laviolette. Maybe he's trying to put his best foot forward for the new coach and really trying to give that leadership buy-in, and he's still figuring it out. There's that possibility too.
Sure. Well, at the same time, isn't Ryan Johansson someone that you would want to be – like, wouldn't you want your $8 million center to be someone that you don't have to rely on other line mates to get you going?
You absolutely would.
Like, you need Ryan Johansson to get everybody else going.
Yes.
That is the role of the number one center on a team.
The best players make the players around them better.
Sure. He has to be the straw that stirs the drink.
For sure.
And but, not but, be the
But he's also not – let's not stirred. Pretend he's the only one struggling either, though.
Well, no.
Matt Duchene, for example, was the big high-prize free agent. We've talked about this on the show ad nauseum, so I'm not going to go too much into detail. But the point is he averages, if you look at his entire career, 10 years coming into this season, he averages 54.7 points per season. That's what he averages. That may have sticker shock on a low end for a lot of people, but that's what he averages, 54.7. This season, he's on pace for 54.8. He is on pace. But you didn't sign him to be on pace. You signed him to be a 65-point guy, to be paired and to be flanked by two talented wingers who can score. Smith has been has had long stretches of struggling this season. Granlund, which we talked about off-air, is not the 65-point guy that he was in Minnesota. For some reason, it is not gelled here, for whatever reason. He looks good at times, got a goal last night, but overall, he's not – You're not able to rely on him for production, right? So Duchene's got to bring up those guys too, and he's just not doing that. So let's not pretend like Johansson's the only flaw here.
Well, no. And Duchene, according to lines at practice today, Duchene was alongside Johansson and Granlund on what I guess you would say the first line.
I would love to see that. I mean, at this point, why not, right? I mean, hey.
At this point, John Hines is just throwing things against the wall to see if it sticks.
Hey, he still has take a deep breath, Preds fans. He still has time. The team still has time to figure it out. Again, they've got a bunch of games in hand on most teams. It's not February yet. They've got some time. Now, they better hop to it, but they have time. So if this Duchene with Johansson, and if that line works out, then maybe we're having a different conversation 2 weeks from now.
Coming up next, David Poile joined Darren Donick and Chase earlier today and had some really interesting comments, not only about Ryan Johansson, but to the core as well, to what you're talking about. It's not just Ryan Johansson. And we're talking about almost everybody outside of the captain. And we'll get into this group, this core group that collectively needs to be better down the stretch for this team to get back into the playoffs. We'll get to that next. Jeremy K. Gover of the Preds Radio Network and thegamenashville.com. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders live from Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon. It's Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Preds Insiders live from Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. Preds Insiders brought to you every week by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Cary Zire Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard in downtown Nashville. Gover, earlier today, GM David Poile joined Darren Donick and Chase for his weekly appearance on the show following last night's 5-2 loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs. And he was asked about Johansson Dye's time and the fact that not only Johansson, but the entire group around him needs to step up.
I mean, I think Ryan is somewhat typical of a lot of our problems this year with some inconsistency. He was one of our best players in our previous game against Buffalo, playing a very important role and playing against the first line of Buffalo, shutting down Jack Eichel. And, you know, the last night playing against top line of Toronto, it went the other way where they had goals against, and it just wasn't a good night. What's always in my evaluation is the history of these players and what they can do. And, you know, I don't think there's any dodge in it. I mean, we can talk about Ryan and we can talk about other players, and I'd say 90% of the time comes down to your best players, your best seven or eight players, how they're playing, what their contribution is with your team, and that's going to probably be the difference of whether you're win or lose. And, you know, I've said this before, it's our best players or not. You know, I'd certainly give Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi a pass on what I'm saying there, because I think they've both been good, and Roman obviously has been fabulous this year, but I can't say that about anybody else in terms of their total contribution to our team, their consistency. We have none of these top players are having career years, so it's got to change quickly if we're going to be a playoff team.
That was David Poile earlier today speaking on Ryan Johansson and really the core of this Predators team. Gover, when you hear David Poile, what do you think?
Well, my instant reaction is he didn't exactly call players out, but he didn't sugarcoat anything. He basically said, I give Josi and Ellis a pass, and I can't say that about anybody else. And it's very telling from a guy who doesn't usually talk like that.
He's been doing that a lot here this month.
For sure.
You know,
you
think back to the John Hines introductory press conference,
right,
and he basically laid it on the players.
Well, he made a point
several
times
to say the top players need to be the top players.
Right. And to put the onus on the coaching change on the players as well, which, again, I thought was interesting. He's right. Josi and Ellis have been spectacular. Forsberg, while he has 33 points in 42 games, and I think you would take that if you said, hey, the midway point, is he going to have 33 points? You're like, all right, that'd be great. But he has not looked as dominant as he could be. Duchesne, we talked about last segment.
Arvidsson. Robbie Stanley of NHL.com brought up a good point last week that I did not think of until he said it, and it's, I think, 100% true with Victor Arvidsson, is that a lot of teams, I think, now know how to defend Victor Arvidsson and defend the breakout pass or the lob passes that he had been getting to spring him loose on breakaways that we saw him score a lot of goals on.
Okay.
And this season, we haven't seen many of those at all from Victor Arvidsson.
Okay, but then that begs the question, is that a system thing where they said they're going to try to do something different and they just have tried to force a round peg into a square hole, or is that truly teams in his sixth NHL season all of a sudden catching on to a guy they now take for real, even though he's a three-time 30-goal scorer, basically? I mean, argument by Robbie makes sense, but he's played six seasons in this league. There's no way they just now figured out, oh, hey, let's push him outside. The dude's going to shoot from everywhere.
But don't you think teams have been more physical on Arvidsson here in the last couple of seasons?
Yeah, but he's not one to back down from physicality. He's fine. The issue is
he's not one to hold up with physicality over a long period
of time. That's fair. And maybe the back is still bothering him as well? Because if they
I thought the Bortuzzo incident was kind of telling with how players are playing against Arvidsson. They know if they get under his skin and they're physical with him that he's not going to be the same player. That's why Victor Arvidsson has not been the same player in the playoffs the last few seasons as he has been in the regular season.
Okay, that's fair, but I would also bring to everyone's attention that Arvidsson shoots from anywhere. He's no stranger to doing that. He still has 12 goals in his 36 games, which is a pretty good clip if you prorate that out to all 82. And on top of that, the Predators are not getting the rebound chances, and they're not creating the traffic in front, and they're they don't have anybody on the back door either, like patrolling those areas for those attempts.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got that takes away half of the threat. I can't, but in theory, I can skate down into the high slot and take a shot from anywhere I want, you know, on the half wall or whatever, and get a puck on net. But if the goalie allows a rebound, which is where the next chance should come from, and there's nobody there to support the puck, then what's the point? It's just a low-danger shot attempt.
Did you skate down to the half wall at your pond hockey tournament in Minnesota?
The pond hockey championships for my team was so bad, I ended up posting pictures of dogs that were there on my Instagram. That's the angle of the story that I took. Look at all these wonderful dogs that are here to take in the event.
You didn't post the scores?
Let's not get into that.
Okay.
And it wasn't just the scores.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it a lot to a little?
It was, I felt like a newborn giraffe on that ice. The ice was just so bad. And on top of that, again, you know, guys from Tennessee and California, we don't skate on that ever. Mm-hmm. And so we're not used to it. Mm-hmm. So we get out there. I promise you, I got off the ice every single time and felt like a newborn giraffe. Like if you were a
team. I've never heard that one before.
If you were a team in Wisconsin and said, hey, this Tennessee team's playing, let's go check out those guys. Mm-hmm. You would think we'd never skated before. It was horrible.
I heard Max Haldeman had to carry you. On the pond, our good friend Max Haldeman.
He did not.
This is Preds Insiders, ESPN
102.5
The Game. Okay. Ryan Porth alongside, whatever you say, Gover. Ryan Porth alongside Jeremy K. Gover. Here's something else, and I'm going to put Calvin on the spot a little bit. Nick Bonino last night had some words after the game that I thought were a little alarming post game. And I believe this was with Fox Sports Tennessee. And Calvin, if you can tell me when it's ready. Nick Bonino last night after the game on the loss, after the 5-2 loss to Toronto.
Consistently this year, lapses have killed us. 20 minutes, they get however many goals they got, they carry play, and we just sit there and take it. So that's something we've obviously been struggling with, our inconsistency. We all want to win, but we're searching for it right now.
That was Nick Bonino last night after the game. And when you put that quote with what Rocco Grimaldi said after the Anaheim game, and you kind of add these post-game reactions up, it is absolutely concerning to me in terms of whether or not this team is going to figure it out on the fly this season.
Would you like to hear my theory?
Go for it.
This is what Max Haldeman and I did on our 13-hour drive back home.
Okay.
From the Pond Hockey
Championship. It's only 13 hours up there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a nice, brisk drive.
Okay.
The theory we came up with was this team, and when I say this team, I mean like, what, 80% of the same team, right? Like 80% of the team went to the Stanley Cup Final. And what seed were they when they went to the Stanley Cup Final? They were the 16th seed. Mm-hmm. They basically barely got in, and they went on this great run, and they earned their spot in the final, lost in six games. Then they stress how important home ice was. Because, again, as a 16th seed, they were never home ice, right? So they stress how important home ice is. What do? They go out and they basically dominate, and they win the President's Trophy, and they secure home ice, only get bounced in the second round by Winnipeg. Then they win the Central and take the Central Division, and then they get bounced in the first round by Dallas. What do all those things have in common, Porth?
What's that?
The lesson that the regular season doesn't matter. Just get in. Get in and then worry about everything else later. And this group is this, short of Mikael Granlin, short of maybe a Dan Hamhuis before last year, short of Matt Duchene, of course. This is the same group that has learned those lessons subconsciously. I'm not calling them conscious.
Yeah.
I'm just saying subconsciously, it's almost like it's not showtime yet.
It
needs to be because they're not going to get to the playoffs, but that's just a pure speculation theory I came up with was the psychology of that lesson over three seasons teaching you the same thing, which is 82 games is too long. It doesn't matter. Just get in and see what happens. That's what I think we're seeing right here.
That's dangerous, though.
It is very dangerous.
If the team is thinking that.
Again, not calling it conscious. Please make sure that.
Just get to the playoffs.
I'm saying subconscious.
And then they'll just turn it on. That's kind of how it felt a lot of last regular season.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't kick it into high gear here soon, then they won't even make the playoffs.
Correct. And maybe that'll be another lesson. And then they come back next season and they don't. Who knows? But right now, that's my current working theory because I am just like you. I am out of ideas. So that's what I've come up with.
Well, I'm kind of worried that internally they're out of ideas too. That's what I worry about, of whether or not they can figure it out on their own, and it's up to the players to figure this thing out.
Because what would that be? It would be a lack of buy-in, not to the message, but to the commitment of every shift. Right? Yeah, I'm not. Everybody stay healthy. Let's just stay healthy. We'll get there. We're too good of a team. Look at our October. We were dominant. Let's go.
Someone texted me last night after the game and said, "What's wrong with this team?" I'm like, they just don't come across as a bunch, as a collective group that is going to do whatever it takes to win a game. That's just flat out what it comes across as, because they take long stretches off in the middle of games.
And that would fit my theory. I'm sticking with it.
It would. And they're doing it at home a lot, too. And another alarming thing with this Preds team is the home record. In their last seven home games, they are 2-5 with a minus 11 goal differential.
That's got to change.
That's not good. Last 50 home games. This is dating dating back to December of 2018.
Does this count the playoffs?
Yes.
Okay.
23-21-6.
Mm.
They've won 23 of their last 50 home games. And 11 of those losses have been by three goals or more.
Oh, that's a heck of a stat.
That is so un-Preds-like.
It is.
Even with way less talented teams than this one right now on paper, and Brent Peterson is sitting almost arm lengths away from me. You'll hear him on Slapshot Radio at 7.
He's not happy you're dragging him into this, by the way.
He's probably not. But he stood behind the bench of a lot less talented teams that defended home ice a lot better, that worked a lot harder, and did a lot of the little things the right way to keep those teams in the mix in the playoff hunt. They overachieved a lot with what they were given by the front office. And this team right now is vastly underachieving.
All I can say to that is it fits also my theory of they knew they had to work every shift in order to be successful. This team looks back at October and knows that they are damn talented. And there's a disconnect there.
The maddening thing about this is that we know it's there with them. We know
we've
it's there
it
because
this
we've
season.
Seen it with this group with earlier this season, in past seasons, in the playoffs. We have seen it with this group. That's the maddening part.
The only different roster players on this team as of right now are Trennan and Blackwell, who were minor league call-ups. Everybody else, we've seen it. This season, with this group, we've seen it. Mm-hmm. And that, you're right, that is the most maddening part.
And to David Poile's point, there aren't many teams, aren't many players outside of Roman Josi having a career year. You know,
Rocco Grimaldi's having a great year.
Sure, but Rocco Grimaldi having a career year.
No, but
he led the team in goals in the playoffs.
Sure, but what I'm saying is that goes back to our conversation in the first segment, was that your depth scoring is great when your top players are producing as top players.
Sure.
Your depth scoring should not be carrying your team. And right now, that's what's keeping them afloat.
Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, was in town yesterday, and he had some interesting comments about a potential future outdoor game in Nashville. We will get to that next. He's Jeremy K. Gover. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders live from Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon on ESPN 102.5. The game streaming on the Game National app. All right, ready? Welcome back into Cherokee Steakhouse in Lebanon. It is Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5. The game. Ryan Porth and Jeremy K. Gover here with you. Proud to be here. Glad to be here. Leading up to Slapshot Radio at 7 and then Penalty Box Radio at 8. A lot of good Preds talk and good food and good prizes here live in Lebanon this evening. So we appreciate the fine folks at Cherokee Steakhouse for having us out here. And yesterday, Gary Bettman, NHL commissioner, was in town making his annual visit to Nashville. And he met with the media yesterday, Gover, and he was asked about the prospect of this city hosting, if not a Winter Classic, perhaps an outdoor game and the logistics that may go along with it. And here is what Gary Bettman had to say.
You talked about the logistics being the issue here in Nashville with hosting a Winter Classic. Are you optimistic that you can overcome those hurdles?
Hopeful would be a better word. I don't know if I know enough to be optimistic or pessimistic. At some point, we'd like to bring an outdoor game here. And if we can do it on January 1st, because the stadium's available, then that would be a good thing to do, particularly since Bridgestone is the sponsor of the Winter Classic. If the logistics of having the stadium availability can't be worked out, then we'll come for a stadium series game, provided we're allowed to use the stadium.
That was Gary Bettman yesterday at Bridgestone Arena at a media availability before the Preds hosted the Toronto Maple Leafs. And Gover, I know the two of us are really into this topic about this city hosting an outdoor game. And we were both there at the Winter Classic at the Cotton Bowl. And I think logistically it would be tough for this city to host a Winter Classic on New Year's Day anytime soon because of the Music City Bowl. But him going out of his way, Gary Bettman that is, to say possibly a stadium series game kind of raised some eyebrows yesterday.
It makes a lot of sense. I think the league really wants to put an event like that in Nashville. Honestly, the league putting events, I can't speak to the 2003 draft, right? But the league putting events in Nashville, they're two for two. If you think of the All-Star weekend and then you think of the Stanley Cup final. Now, again, they didn't put the final there, but they saw what happened when the event was here. So, you know, just really great things here in Nashville. The fans always come out. And, of course, was it 20-something fans, 23, an estimated 23,000, whatever the number was, migrated to Dallas, which is larger than Bridgestone itself, the capacity of Bridgestone itself. So really, fans really made a statement going down to Dallas for the game, and I think they really cemented the idea that the league should have an outdoor event here in Music City. The telling thing for me, though, when you listen to guys like this, we know this because we're around them so much, like just athletes and you know, people of that ilk. So Commissioner Bettman talks. He's never going to give you any concrete answers unless it's finalized or official, but there's veiled language. And I read into his comments there, the ones you just heard, as to say they have not been allowed the stadium, and that's why they haven't come here yet. And I don't know if that's groundbreaking news for anybody, but for me it was telling to hear him kind of basically wink, wink, nod, nod about that. He said, yeah, hey, we'd love to come here if we're allowed to use the stadium. I mean, you know, so to me that seems to be the hurdle, but the city of Nashville will figure it out, and it'll be a great, great event.
Well, I hope the people over at Nissan Stadium were listening to Gary Bettman say that.
One would hope.
One would hope.
One would hope.
But I'm not going to hold my breath
right.
a very long time over that one. Jeremy Kegover, Ryan Porth here with you, Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The other point on, let's say, a stadium. Let's just say a stadium series game, because I think that is a lot more realistic
it is
now than a Winter Classic.
Right.
I think what the Preds, what this fan base has proven is that they don't need a Pittsburgh or a Chicago or a Detroit or a Philadelphia or that big TV market team to be the opponent. They don't need that to sell that place out.
Oh, of course.
This city
We've been trying to tell the league that for years.
But as a city, we haven't quite proven that until 4 or 5 years ago.
There was still that mantra.
I think the All-Star game, the Stanley Cup final, I would say those two happening in back-to-back calendar years was a pretty big step in proving, and the TV ratings that came along with it, and that the Preds and Penguins put up great TV ratings on NBC locally and nationally, proved to the league that this city can host big events. And they're going to host another one, really cool one, February 16th, Hockey Day in America. Yep. NBC will be here all day. I mean, this city is proving that it can host and it should host these big events.
In both good seasons for the team.
Sure.
And struggling seasons for the team, which I think is the telling factor, right? So it's not like, oh, well, of course they can. They're doing well. No. It doesn't matter how the team is doing. The city will turn out and put on a great show.
Sure. All right. We have about 90 seconds left. The Preds visit the Washington Capitals tomorrow night, the first of a back-to-back out east. Washington tomorrow, New Jersey Thursday. I don't know how you can really answer this question, but what are you expecting tomorrow night between the Preds and the Caps? Pre-game 5:30, puck drop 6:30.
I would love to tell you that I'm expecting an energized team that's really upset about last night. I would love to tell you that. But I can see that, and I could also see a defeated team. Right? I'm speechless because I have...
Speechless like a Dan and Chase.
because I have no idea. Every time I expect something from this team, it's either the opposite, but they give me just what I expect, just enough to give me that hope. Every single game. Oh, well, they're going to come out. They're going to blow the doors off the place, and then they do that one time, and I'm like, oh, see, told you. And then they, you know, I don't know the answer to that.
I'm right there with you. I saw a metric, I believe, on NHL.com or Sportsnet. One of those major publications saying that the Preds have, I think, the third most difficult schedule remaining in the National Hockey
League. Oh, they got a ton of playoff teams coming up.
Oh, it's well. Last night technically was not a playoff team with Toronto,
but
they
Toronto's
are
a great
caliber.
Team. Yes,
you've
well,
got
that's the same thing.
Washington tomorrow night.
Say that about the Preds.
Sure. Well, and you've got Vegas, I mean, after Thursday, you've got some playoff caliber games. So maybe Vegas, Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver.
Maybe that's what
that five
to my
game
theory,
stretch right there.
Yeah, according to my theory last segment, maybe that's the stretch that this team is waiting for. They know they got to bring it,
and they know they
play to their competition most of the times. Mm-hmm. So maybe this is going to get them in a groove. Who knows?
Can't afford to wait for it.
All I know is I do believe they'll make the playoffs. I honestly do believe that. I just think this team is too good to do that. Now, what they do in the playoffs, I couldn't tell you. But I do believe they'll get in.
Gover, thanks for being here tonight.
Poor, thanks for inviting me, man.
You're always welcome.
I appreciate that. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All the applause for Jeremy Kaye.
Sarcastic applause from Bradford in the back.
TheGameNashville.com and the Predators Radio Network. Justin Bradford also in attendance here. You can hear him at 8 on Penalty Box Radio. But coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio with Paul McCann, Zach McCann, and Brent Peterson coming up here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.